I'd like to convene the first and hopefully last meeting of the biennium of the House Ethics Committee. Thank you all for being here. Let's start with introductions. I'm Representative Jim Dabney. Why don't we start with the committee page? Thank you.
I'm Tom Brennan.
Thank you for your help today, Tom. Representative Murphy, we can just go around the room.
I'm Mary Murphy, and I represent District 3B, Northeastern Minnesota.
Jim Kelly, Representative 21A, Southeastern Minnesota.
I'm Tara Mack, District 57A, Apple Valley, Lakeville.
Tawana Hawkins, Committee Legislative Assistant.
Jessica Nyman, Committee Administrator.
Jeff Diebel, House Research.
Kelby Woodard, representing Southern Scott County and Western Lesueur County.
Very good. Thank you all. Representative, well, Craig, say hi.
Thank you.
Representative Atkins is currently presenting a bill before the Ways and Means Committee. So I'm sure he'll join us if he can, but at the in the meantime, I thought we could proceed. My intent as chair for this meeting, as I explained to most, if not all, the members on the floor, yesterday when I found you, was simply to establish the procedures and rules and procedure for the committee in hope that we don't have to use them, but to have those nailed down so in case there is a complaint, everyone already knows what the procedures are. It's simply the school teacher and me. Put the rules out there, let everybody know what the process is, and then go forward and hope you don't need to use them. With that, Mr. Diebel, you have worked on some rules of procedure for the committee. If you could please walk the committee through that.
Yes, Mr. Chair and members. You'll find a variety of documents in your packet today. The foundation of the rules for handling a complaint in the Ethics Committee can be found in the permanent rules of the House, which is specifically 6.10. That rule establishes the Ethics Committee and also directs it to adopt procedures, and that's the purpose of today's meeting. The procedures that are in your packet have been in existence in their current form since at least 2007. I don't have a history before that, but I know that the flowchart that goes along with it is from 2006, and it's a handy guide as we walk through this, so you want to keep that at close at hand. A complaint must be initiated by two members of the House and put down in writing and specify the misconduct upon which the complaint is based. The 6.10 says that the allegations must include a violation of a rule or administrative policy of the House, or a violation of accepted norms of the House, or a betrayal of the public trust, or finally, an action that brings the House into dishonor or disrepute. So if the complaint is signed by two members, they must provide a copy of it to members, the member that's identified in the complaint or members, prior to submitting it to the Speaker of the House. As you look at the flow chart, the Speaker has 7 days after receiving the complaint to forward it to the Ethics Committee. You'll see as you drop down from the Ethics Committee, there are three preliminary ways to or summarily dismiss the complaint. Left to right, the first is that the complainant has decided that they're not going to pursue it any longer. The second is that a majority of the members determine it to be frivolous. If either of those grounds or those reasons exist for the dismissal of the complaint, then the Ethics Committee consider whether the matter was frivolous to begin with. And if so, then they can punish the parties that submitted the complaint. The third grounds to dismiss a complaint at the initial review by the Ethics Committee is if the committee determines by majority vote that the violation is a technical violation of a rule or inadvertent or de minimis, meaning not of substance, in which case they can recommend some sort of voluntary remedy on part of the person complained or identified as in the complaint, or suggest changes to the rules that others don't run afoul of them inadvertently. If the matter is not dismissed at that initial review, then it must be put before the full Ethics Committee at a hearing called the probable cause hearing within 21 days of the hearing. probable cause hearing must determine whether the allegations are more likely or not true. So it's a preponderance of the evidence standard. If the allegations are not found to be, if there's not probable cause or preponderance evidence to support the allegations, then you dismiss the complaint and the matter is resolved. However, if there is probable cause, then the matter would be before a disciplinary hearing by the Ethics Committee. And there's no timeline for conducting that hearing. I should step back and say that the complaint needs to be filed before the legislature adjourns sine die. But we've, from my experience, we've held hearings after adjournment sine die. So as long as the complaint's in before the, I assume that's in within, that was within the summer between the 2 years of the biennium. I would suspect that if the there might be issues if you were to try to hold a hearing after you adjourned sine die the second year, but because of some of the difficulty of putting a recommendation before a legislature that has not been elected, whereas if you're in the interim between the 2 years, then you could recommend a sanction to the incoming legislature, which would be of the same, which would be, there'd be consistency there as opposed to going through an election cycle. So there's no timeline for holding the disciplinary hearing, but the expectation, I think, is that it'd probably be handled relatively quickly after the probable cause hearing. The person, the parties that are identified in the complaint have full due process rights at the probable cause hearing and the disciplinary hearing. They can be represented by counsel. They can present the case, as well as the, basically the members that file the complaint are the prosecutors. They're the ones prosecuting their case against the parties that are identified in the complaint, and they have full right to present all their evidence too. One other thing about any stage, the committee can vote to go into executive session. In other words, it excludes the public. That can be done at the probable cause hearing so as to not prejudice a member who's been identified in the complaint, especially if the allegations are found not to be warranted or justified. In other words, no probable cause, so that isn't something that would perhaps stick with the member. Also, it can be done to protect the privacy of third parties or protect medical records. So if it gets to the probable cause hearing, moves to the disciplinary hearing, again, this would be public unless you vote to by a majority to have it in executive session. If there's not clear and convincing evidence that disciplinary action is warranted, then the matter is dismissed and the parties move on. However, if there is clear and convincing evidence, which is defined as highly probable, it's in between the preponderance of evidence standard and the beyond a reasonable doubt standard, then the Ethics Committee would make a recommendation to the full body as to what the sanction would be for the misconduct. The options include expulsion, which requires a two-thirds majority vote of the House. We can also recommend reprimand, censure, financial restitution, other remedial action, even counseling on the part of the member. And at that point, the committee's work is done because they've made the recommendation to the House, and the House's job is to vote to support the recommendation or perhaps even come up with their own discipline based on the allegations. So that's running through the, briefly running through the process from complaint to recommendation.
Any questions of committee members? Mr. Deaver. Representative Mack.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a brief question. If the committee were to elect to have executive sessions, at that point, are members of the committee in a situation where to talk about it publicly, certain expectations or what's expected that we talked about that in committee cannot be in public information or conversation outside the room? Or is there anything in the statute that dictates how that's handled?
Mr. Deaver?
Let me find the exact. When you go into executive session, the chair would direct the members that whatever said and produced in the executive session is considered private. So the expectation is that that information would not go beyond the walls of the room that was served. And here's, it's in Rule 5, so line 2.17. It says the committee shall advise all participants in an executive session of the confidentiality requirement. And then it describes that any records created in that executive session will be destroyed by December 31st of the that calendar year.
Anything else, Representative Mann? Mr. Diebel, let me ask a question going off of that. As I look at House Rule 6.10, the first, second, third, fourth, fifth paragraph, a complaint of a breach of confidentiality by a member or employee of the House must be immediately referred to the Speaker to the Ethics Committee for disciplinary action. Is there an interaction between Rule 5 and the proposed rules of procedure and that provision in Rule 6.10?
Certainly, if you're a member of this committee, Mr. Chair, and you violated the directive to maintain confidentiality in the executive session, that would be grounds for someone filing a being directed back to, which would obviously present a very sticky situation if you're on the ethics committee. But
all right. Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is probably for Mr. Diebel, but the role of the alternate, obviously not a voting member unless one of the other members of the committee is unable to serve, or can you give me some insight into that one?
Mr. Diebel.
Mr. Chair, Representative Woodard, that would be my understanding, as and clearly these situations could raise conflicts of interest pretty easily based on the nature of the business before the body, so I could see that someone recusing themselves based on a conflict of interest and that the alternate step in.
Mr. Diebel, I know little about the jury process, but my understanding is often you have a jury seated with alternates, and the alternates sit through the trial, and then at the point that the jury moves into its deliberations, the alternates are discharged, is my understanding. With that model, would that establish an expectation that if there is a hearing of a complaint, that the other members, what's the term I just
alternates.
Alternates. My apologies. Thank you. The alternates would be present for the presentation of evidence, and could then be excused at that point, or how would that operate?
Mr. Chair and members, the rules are silent as to whether the alternates need to be present during a ethics committee. So I think that would be at the. I don't think you probably. There's no grounds for excluding them except for the inherent powers of the chair. Prudent to have them there in case you had some question as to someone's availability to serve the pendency of the complaint or the hearings.
Thank you. Other questions? Representative Kelly.
Mr. Chair, I guess just as an alternate in previous sessions, I can tell you the way it was explained to me is exactly what Mr. Diebel said, is with conflict of interest issues or something where an alternate would actually step in. Otherwise, their service was to been waiting, basically. So it wasn't part of any, of course, we didn't have one, but that was the way it was explained to me. If needed, you'll step in. If not, you won't.
Thank you, Representative Kelly. Other questions? Mr. Diebel, can you walk us through the rules of procedure? Or did you just do that by walking through the graphic?
Mr. Chair and members, yes, the rules of procedure simply take you step by step. And I would say that they aren't particularly complete with legal terms. It's more layman's terms, so it's not something that's really densely written in the legal terms. So I think the flowchart actually does a nice job of taking the plain English that's in the procedure rules and breaking it down into the essential elements.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
We don't still have the flowchart.
Can we get some quick copies just so everybody has it, please?
You got it.
My apologies, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, it's quite all right.
It's a small number of copies. It shouldn't take long.
I think I have
one.
Yes. In the meantime, in the absence, you know, Mr. Diebel did walk through the process that is in the proposed rules of procedure. Any other questions? Representative Mack.
I guess back to the alternate question really briefly. The alternates that are in place, is that only, I mean, does that go down party lines, as in, like, if you're missing someone from one side of the aisle or the other, only the alternate steps in to replace if someone from their party's missing, or if it's simply if the committee's short, that alternate steps in no matter party affiliation?
Representative Mack, I understand the question. My understanding is that the committee should operate with an equal number of Democrats and Republicans.
Okay.
And so if Representative Kelly, for some reason, is unable, or you are the alternate, if you are unable to serve Representative Mack, Representative Kelly would step in your absence. Yeah, the structure of the committee really is a balanced approach to avoid partisan use of the ethics process. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi. You want to? I didn't anticipate public testimony, but if you'd like to come forward.
Yeah, this is about ethics. Could somebody explain what that means? I'm not quite sure.
Sure. Why don't you introduce yourself? I know you, but not everybody else.
My name is Rick Keller. I'm on the committee representing the exceptional and princess disabled, and frankly, sometimes called the culture of diversity. These are all individuals that live in financial world.
Mr. Heller, House Rule 6.10, and I'm going to go out on a limb here a little bit with a lawyer present, so that's a good thing, talks about, let me find it. A complaint may be brought about conduct by a member that violates a rule or administrative policy of the House, that violates accepted norms of House behavior, that betrays the public trust, or that tends to bring the House into dishonor or disrepute. In the past, Mr. Diebel, you can check me on that. That has included everything from things members have said, things members have tweeted, I think, or at least social media behavior, let's put it that way. Arrests for various behaviors. But importantly, I think, just to clarify, the complaint can only be made by two members of the House. So this is the body with which the House governs itself on behavior.
So if I may ask
Mr. Heller.
For instance, there was a situation last year that took place with one of the senators. Is this the committee, or not this committee, but would that be the one of the Canada situation, the allegations that what was between the OU or the contempt is sitting in the room that has to do with a lawsuit?
Well, the situation that I believe you're referring to, well, it did involve a senator. Luckily, it was a senator, not a House member. Mr. Diebel, can you obviously? There's two dimensions to that. One is the employment relationship for the with the staff member, which would not fall under the jurisdiction of this committee, because our jurisdiction is only the 134 members of the House and not staff or others. But if a situation was if a similar situation presented itself here in the House, it would be possible for two members to file a complaint regarding the allegations of behavior against the member. Am I correct?
Mr. Chair, yes, you're correct.
And then additionally, if not by rule, but by the members' due process rights, we certainly, depending on the specifics of the situation, would allow any criminal process to go forward before we acted, I assume, to protect their rights in court. And I think that is in the rules of procedure, if I recall. What about civil processes?
Mr. Chair and members, I think the probable criminal, yes, you're correct. In Rule 6, it's on line 224 to 226, it says that the matter must be, if there's a criminal action pending, you need to suspend action on the complaint. It's silent on civil matters. I would say that the rule of 21 days to determine a probable cause is would need to be waived if you chose to delay action on that. And then, like I said before, there's no timeline for handling a hearing on disciplinary recommendations. So at that point, I think it would be within the prerogative of the chair as to when he or she scheduled the disciplinary action hearing.
So if I'm to understand you, Mr. Diebel, we could separate the process from the determination of probable cause and the decision on consequences. And I know I'm not using the proper language.
Yes, Mr. Chair, there's a hard 21-day requirement to hold a hearing and determine probable cause, but there is no timeline for taking that next step for recommending disciplinary action.
So, Mr. Chair?
Representative Kelly.
If I could, not to oversimplify this, but to take the question literally, I think the question was about the actions in the Senate. This would not be the committee that would handle that. That would have to be a Senate Ethics Committee. But just to make sure we're...
A point well taken.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Heller, we took your question, then we ran with it a bit.
That's fine. I appreciate it, Chair. One final thing. I have a complaint to ask you. Is one of those complaints that accessibility did through the services of the lines, which is in the group that was filled out this group during the line of the office impact of the members to compare something that currently represents the individual to the services of the line. The reason I brought this up is because approximately 3 weeks ago, I tried to access the rules. They're not fully electronic accessible equipment, meaning the PDF reader, which reads text to speech upload and then access that. And I've been told by the people on Facebook,
LCC, yes. The Legislative Coordinating Commission. Representative Murphy, thank you.
If the legislature is exempt from Minnesota Statute 16, that is why Statute 16 has to be in the 2.0 and also the accessibility and the component. They confirm that the legislature is exempt from that statute. But I find interesting about this is going back to my complaint, it's still unresolved. An unofficial referendum with all the Minnesotans. The point is that it's a private exceptional. An unofficially referendum with individuals. And I continue to get the run around that. For instance, I'll give you one example. Live Anywhere, which is still active, which reads HTML language, which is a legal page where typically the instructions in English and also reconstructed in this particular time. So, too, if I wasn't blind, frankly, I would say, based on law, that you're not making this document accessible for the blind, period. Now, even ADA would have something to say about it. And if Ms. Williams, they always tell me to do case-by-case basis for me specifically, but you know, I might have it, so that's the individuals. And I can't get access for accessibility to the rules. How can I call my representative? How can I express to them only what was described in the books? I think it's of urgent importance. You want full engagement, participation, and action from the individual that represents you for that Crestless issue of accessibility for your constituents. And I believe I can clearly express today that there is somebody that's quite disabled and twice exceptional in every one of your districts.
All right.
Also, at least, or maybe not. When I think about ethics, your reputation at stake, anything that goes to testify you as an individual, so what comes out of my mouth is accurate. I challenge you each to consider this in your own hearts and consciousness. You know, if we can't create accessibility, how can we have equal opportunity and successful outcomes for those individuals? And we do not read independently, silently, but perhaps take information early, but simply by making an electronic information 21st century ready and fully accessible to Texas each year.
Thank you, Mr. Heller. Seeing no further discussion, I will move adoption of the proposed rules of procedure. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. With that, we stand adjourned. Thank you all very much.